Yeah. DC. Turn the lights on the diamond. Man. This that 260 dug out. Mic up, DC in the chair, talking Fort Wayne dirt, red clay in the air, from the sandlot days, scrape knees, hand-me-down gloves to park few nights, packed seats, hometown love, summer city sluggers, little homies with a dream, little league lines, chalk bright, fresh seams, ask the guests how it started, how they carried the doubt, now they legends in the making on the 260 dugout, yeah, it's that 260 dugout. Pull up, let the stories come out. From the cages to the lights, that's what we about. Four ain't on the cow, we ain't never gonna bow out. 260 dugout,
say it.
260 dugout,
louder.
From the kids to the pros, that's the route. Every dream gets a swing in the 260 dugout.
And I am your host, DC Hendrix, and this is the 260 Dugout Podcast. Great to be with you once again for another edition of this podcast as we are getting going. Next week, we will begin our college previews, starting with the St. Francis Cougars. Both baseball and softball coaches and players will be joining us for next week's episode as we get geared up for this upcoming college season. And of course, some of their seasons already began, including St. Francis. So the baseball team has already gotten started, already had their trip down south, and a home game coming up, believe it or not, right here in Fort Wayne. We'll see how that goes as I look outside, and the field does not look playable. Grass does not look good right now, so we will be talking to Coach Butcher from the baseball team next week, Coach Boyle from the softball team, and a couple of players from each program as well. So this week, though, as February is wrapping up, I definitely wanted to make sure to highlight Black baseball in Fort Wayne. And thanks again for another edition for this week's podcast. Gotta give thanks before we even get started to all of our great sponsors for believing in this podcast. And of course, we got a big guest today that is a big part of returning with the podcast and a big supporter. Logan Weening of the Old Fort Baseball Company will be joining us here in just moments as we will be talking Black baseball in Fort Wayne. He's got some great stuff he's been working on that we can talk about. But also special thanks to GSP Hitting, Justin Glass and his company over there, Glass Sports Performance, doing great job with our athletes, our local high school and college athletes that are working out over there. And of course, thanks to McMahon's Best One Auto, which is your one-stop shop for all car and truck and van needs. So let's get into it. Black baseball in Fort Wayne. Tim Tassler, historian of Fort Wayne baseball, will be joining us later on in the show. But I wanted to start off with our great sponsor, Logan Weening from Old Fort Baseball Company, who's been doing great stuff. So let's get into it. It's time to talk black baseball in Fort Wayne. Logan, what's going on?
Hey, DC, how's it going?
I'm doing really good. Excited. First of all, thank you so much for once again, as we get in geared up for season two, thank you for once again believing in this podcast and my vision, my goal, what I try to accomplish, and no, being an extension of that as well with your company.
Yeah, no, I think it's awesome. We've been talking a lot about ideas for this year, and it's really exciting to see it take off for you. I know you've been putting a lot of work in, so it's really cool, and I'm happy that the community is really supporting it and the baseball community is really getting behind it.
Absolutely. I can't thank everyone enough for what's happening with this podcast, and just not even a full year. It hasn't even been a full year since we started this podcast.
Wow.
It literally
yeah.
hasn't.
That's
and
crazy. We were just like ideas at this point last year, if
nuts.
That.
Yeah. Yeah, we were. I don't even think it was brought up yet.
Yeah,
we didn't even start talking about it until March. So it's crazy. But I can't thank everyone enough, including you. So what have you been up to these last couple of months? I know when baseball season ends, I know it makes things a little bit weird for you. I know I think you were on the last episode
yep.
of season one. So what have you been up to since then? It's been like, what, 3-4 months?
Yeah. So, you know, baseball off season for us is kind of a strange thing, like you said, because you hit the holiday season where it's obviously really busy and, you know, you're pushing a lot of stuff there and doing pop-ups and things with the market and all that. But then, you know, it kind of slows down from an in-person perspective, but it's a lot of planning, a lot of research, ideas, designing, you know, just trying to come up with the fun and exciting events and content and merch that we, you know, will have all throughout the summer. So we're getting some ideas together and really getting ready to kick off. We'll start the market again outdoors in May,
nice.
First week of May. So still got a few months there and just starting to get everything loaded up.
So before we talk black baseball in Fort Wayne, which I know you got some stuff to talk about there, before we get started into that, go ahead and promote some of the stuff that you have, you know, available that, you know, you think a lot of people have been, you know, interested in over the past, you know, couple of weeks or even the past month or so?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's always the things that I think stand out as what sells the most is our, you know, Fort Wayne Daisies stuff, our, you know, old Wizards themed things. Yeah. Our Zollner Pistons stuff has been really popular. Fire. I think, you know, that's fun because it's more recognizable for people, but, mm-hmm. you know, kind of giving the background of the softball, the men's softball portion of the Pistons history. Yeah. So that's a lot of fun and people have really, really been into that. But then, you know, diving into some of the high school stuff and some college stuff, you know, you mentioned seasons picking up, Indiana Tech. Yeah. We have Indiana Tech gear out there that we've partnered with them on. So there's always new stuff, always fun stuff. And some of it is more just about learning about cool pieces of the past and seeing what you can dig up.
So speaking of learning cool things from the past, as we celebrate Black baseball in Fort Wayne and the history of it on today's episode, I look on the website and first thing on the homepage and under new arrivals on oldfortbaseballco.com, I see some fantastic fire merch from the Fort Wayne Colored Giants. Vintage hats, you got hoodies, you got snapbacks. I mean, take me behind the scenes of, you know, the creation of this for you and the process behind it.
Yeah, so the Colored Giants stuff, you know, the Colored Giants are a thing where if you would do a basic Google search of Fort Wayne Black baseball, Negro Leagues in Fort Wayne, yeah. Colored Giants, whatever, you would find, you know, there's one photo that exists of the team from probably the early 20s that was out there. And then you'll find some very surface level articles that kind of talk about the fact that the Fort Wayne Colored Giants were a team that played in Fort Wayne. They were not in a league. Yep. They were not specifically, you know, part of what you would call the Negro Leagues, kind of capital letter Negro Leagues that you hear about regularly. But, you know, they were a big part of Fort Wayne baseball for, you know, almost 50 years, kind of from 1908 until, you know, the late 50s, right at the early 60s, you know, playing regionally here. So what I was able to do and what I wanted to do was to be able to kind of educate more about the importance of that team and what they provided to the community. But also, as I said, there's only one picture.
Right.
And there's no, you know, you can kind of see that it just said Fort Wayne on the jerseys, which is normal of that time. Yeah. But, you know, trying to bring some of that a little more modern and give people an opportunity to represent that legacy and, you know, realize how important that Black baseball in Fort Wayne was, you know, and how it tied into the larger baseball picture of that time period, you know, across the country. And I think there really is a lot of connections there.
So, yeah, established back in 1908, the Fort Wayne Colored Giants. So you created the logo then.
Yeah.
That's on the merch.
Yep.
So in a video that you dropped that I loved on social media, you talked about your process behind even creating the logo and what you were trying to accomplish with the logo that you made, which is so fire. Like, I thought that was a legitimate logo. So, like, kudos to you for that. Yeah. But an extension to your video, talk about, you know, what went behind you creating that logo.
Yeah, so when I approach designs like that, where you're trying to kind of bring a team, give a team a logo that maybe didn't, you know, it's about referencing the local connection to it and then also tying into the time. So, like, you see what I hope that people recognize is whether they know about the team or they know, you know, the time period specifically that they played, that you would be able to look at the merch and the logo and see what time period it came from and really be able to kind of feel the story that we're trying to tell. And, you know, I talked about in that video, you know, referencing teams of that era. So looking at what other Negro League teams were wearing, because you look at a team like the Kansas City Monarchs, the Homestead Grays, the teams that you know about, and you can pull inspiration from the styles that they would have used because they had more, you know, they had better uniforms and more logos and posters and different things that had a little more design elements to it. So pulling stuff from that, You know, that's really what it's all about, is trying to make sure you're, you don't want to make it too modern. You know, you want it to look relatable, but also feel like it's of the era that it comes from, and make people want to connect to it and want to tell the story.
Yeah, absolutely. And on top of all of that, and this is, I would say, and if you ever check your traffic history on your website, or if you keep track of what pages get the views, the 04baseballco.com /blackbaseball, it was probably on me.
Yeah,
I've went to this page so many times over the last week or so.
Yeah.
And because there's so much information on this page that you created on the website, and it just talks about, you know, the legacy behind Black Baseball and Fort Wayne. So for people, and it obviously has the merch on there that you made, but also talk about some of the other things. There's all kinds of stuff on this page that you created.
Yeah, so a couple of the things that are really unique, kind of, I think, underappreciated pieces of the way that Negro League Baseball and Black Baseball ties to Fort Wayne is, you know, where Fort Wayne is located in the Midwest, being a, it was a railroad hub in, you know, the 20s, 30s, 40s, up, you know, into the 60s. So you saw it with major league teams, you saw it with professional Negro League teams, that this was a stop, you know, between playing a game in Cincinnati and Chicago, or playing a game in Philadelphia and Chicago. These teams would stop in Fort Wayne and play exhibition games. So there's a lot on there of old newspaper clippings of, you know, the Kansas City Monarchs, Jackie Robinson and the Monarchs, and Hank Aaron and the Indianapolis Clowns, and the Homestead Grays with Josh Gibson. And, you know, those players all stopping in Fort Wayne to play against, you know, whether it was the Lincoln Life team or the Voltmen in the 40s, the semi-pro team, and playing exhibition games like that. But then on the flip side, you know, some of those Negro League players that made a big impact in the 30s and 40s on Negro League teams, a lot of them, and I think I highlight five specifically, that came and ended up playing in Fort Wayne on the semi-pro team here that was a national champion, you know, five or six times in the 40s and 50s, and playing for that team. So players like Pat Scantleberry and Lester Lockett and Bill Ricks, who all, you know, rubbed shoulders and were teammates with your Jackie Robinsons, your Satchel Paiges, your, you know, Josh Gibson, those type of players, you know, came and called Fort Wayne home for 2, 3, 4 years, and then were top performers for, you know, the Voltmen and the Fort Wayne Caparts and North American Van Lines and all those teams that were winning championships at, you know, in an integrated setting. So really just interesting things and really cool connections to Negro League baseball history that a lot of people just wouldn't recognize because they're not your household names, but they're also, those teams in Fort Wayne weren't household names at this point in history. So
you're making me feel like I should have worn my Josh Gibson jersey today. I feel like that's a huge miss by me, man. I'm feeling unprepared today. But yeah, that was one of my favorite things I wanted to bring you on to talk about, is this page that you created. Like my favorite newspaper clipping that you had, just to give you full, you and the audience a full, you know, picture of what, you know, I'm looking at here. Terrific baseball. That was the headline. Tonight, see the national champion GE, General Electric Voltmen, versus Homestead Grays. And that's obviously, like you just said, Josh Gibson on that team. National Negro League champions between 37 and 45, right at 8:30 at Dwinger Park.
Yes.
Right here in Fort Wayne. Special bus service, national semi-pro baseball champion GE Voltmen. Gotta love it, man. That's definitely my favorite newspaper clipping that you have. It mentions the Indianapolis Clowns, who are back.
Yep.
Different fashion.
Right.
With the banana ball, if you're a fan of that. I don't mind it. I know a lot of people, there's a lot of people that don't like it. But either way, Indianapolis Clowns are back. They were also here in Fort Wayne, the Fort Wayne Chiefs. And then, yeah, like you said, Lester Lockett, who played for the GE Voltmen, four-time Negro League All-Star as well, that you have right on the website. Bill Ricks, I think you mentioned as well, that was also on GE Voltmen. So, yeah, tons of talent that have played here. And that's why we, you know, I wanted to bring you on, first of all, because you have also done a lot of great work in addition to Tim Tassler for highlighting black baseball in Fort Wayne. And there's so much to talk about, so much information. So I advise everyone to go to 04baseballco.com to get that information. And also check out the merchandise that my guy Logan had put together. It is so fire. I can't wait to get my gear, wear my hoodie and my hat. It'll go real good with my Grays jersey as well that I have. So, but definitely support everything at 04baseballco.com. But Logan, also, I didn't want to bring you in to also before we let you go and move on to Tim, who's waiting.
Yeah.
He's waiting patiently outside the door for his turn. Sticker Club. Yeah. I'm also a huge fan of that. And I want, because I believe this is one of the best bangs for your buck that you can ask for, especially as a baseball fan. So promote Sticker Club once more for us.
Yeah. So our Support Local Baseball Sticker Club, you know, it was a cool thing that I came up with of a way to, you know, introduce people to the cool things happening in the baseball community around the country. So for $6 a month, every month you will get 4 to 5 stickers from baseball teams, leagues, companies, museums, nonprofits from around the country, you know, mailed directly to your house. It's something that for me is really cool. And I've made a lot of really great connections with these groups that we feature. And we do it. It doesn't cost anything for these teams and leagues to be featured. It's really a way for them to, you know, bring awareness to what they're doing. You know, we spotlight them on social media. We include a postcard that has a QR code to their website, social page,
whatever. That's a hit even for my toddler daughter, who is a phone thief these days. She looks forward to that part of my stickers because she likes to scan them.
Yeah.
And it brings up, obviously, all the information about the teams. So it's even a hit. Look, even if, you know, you're older, or even for the younger kids, it's a good way for them to learn too.
Yeah, and it's, you know, for me, it's an opportunity to kind of give back to some of these teams too, because in reality, it's not costing them anything. No. And if one Sticker Club member scans it and buys a hat, like, that's a win for me. Is that's what we're trying to do, is to get awareness, introduce people in the baseball community to new things and things that may be local, maybe regional. And just some cool, you know, who doesn't love stickers? Who doesn't love cool art? Who doesn't love getting physical mail that is important? Like, that's an underrated part of it, is like just the fact of getting something cool in the mail that isn't junk mail in the year 2026 is a cool thing that people enjoy.
These days, that's the only mail I don't throw away.
Right. Yeah, so, exactly.
Everything else straight in the trash.
Yeah.
I already got the bill electronically online, so don't need to send it. All right.
Yeah.
2026. All seriousness though, Logan, man, thank you so much for coming on, and thanks for everything that you do. And again, believing in this podcast, being an extension of it. I know we got some big things in the works next month, so this will not be the last time people hear from you. March will be a big thing for us as well, and we will save. That's called a radio tease.
Yeah.
So just stay tuned for that, everyone. But Logan, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thanks, DC.
This is someone that, you know, when I even started doing this podcast, he's one of the first names that was not only brought up to me, but that I already knew that I needed to have this person on. When you talk baseball in Fort Wayne, you got to know who Tim Tassler is. And for this month being special to me as a black man, celebrating, you know, Black History Month, there's no one to go to get the history of black baseball in Fort Wayne, none other than Tim Tassler. Tim, it is an honor and pleasure to have you in studio and on the podcast today.
DC, my pleasure. I appreciate you having me on.
It is a long time coming. I'm very excited to talk with you about not only black baseball, but get to know you. This is the first time we've met each other in person, so I'm very excited to get to know you personally. So I've told my stories on how I got involved in baseball, which for me, as I have, you know, told the audience, I began playing 4 years old, T-ball growing up, played high school ball, a little bit of rec ball, college ball. So I'm here today, though, giving back to the game the best way I can, and that's helping by telling stories of, you know, the past, present, and future of baseball in Fort Wayne. So how did you get how are you in baseball coming up? When did you fall in love with the game of baseball?
Fell in love with it early, like you did. Started playing Little League and just kind of bounced around. I played Legion ball. I played with the local senior league here for men. I played up until I was like 50 years old, I think.
Nice.
And just got to know a lot of people that were in the baseball community here, and that's really where it started and where it continued, and still see those guys today.
So when you were a player, what was your position? What was your strengths?
First base. Defense was my strengths.
Nice.
I hit okay. I played fast pitch too, so I had kind of a fast pitch softball swing to me. But defense was probably it. First base, played a little outfield and pitched a little bit left-handed.
Nice, a little left-hander. Gotta. Those are always the good first basemen, the little left-handers. So, I want to start off. So, when did you? How did this come about with you even getting started? You know, becoming. Let's start with just baseball in general, right? So, you talked about, you know, you started as a youngster, falling in love with the game. So, like many of us, you know, when we realize we're probably not going to make it professionally, this probably isn't going to be our career and our job every day, we try to find ways to maneuver and find out how else we can give back to this game that we all love. So, when was that moment for you, and what kind of helped you transition into that role?
It probably was when I met Bob Parker. Bob Parker was a big historian here in Fort Wayne. Mm-hmm. He was a graphic artist. You may know his baseball cards that float around town. They're on eBay. He just kind of gave me the love for history besides baseball. And I wasn't a big fan of history in school. Mm-hmm. So
neither was I.
As I've grown and gotten older, it's become more and more important. And it just comes down to you want to tell that story. You know, you have a story, I have a story, everybody's got a story that's important to them, but when you convey that to others, it makes a really big impact sometimes. And, you know, you don't know where people are coming from, you don't know their backgrounds, but it's interesting to know where that foundational part of them come from. So that was basically it. Bob was instrumental in just telling me how important that was and to understand it and make sure that was something that I paid attention to, and that's just grew from there.
So Bob Parker, isn't there an award
for
Bob Parker, and you've won that?
I did.
Right? So that had to feel good, you know, learning from him and getting that award. Talk about that moment for you.
It did. Yeah, it was based on my research. I spent 13 years researching black baseball in Fort Wayne.
Wow.
It was a story that wasn't told. Nobody really knew about it. I had joined the local Sabre chapter, the Society of American Baseball Research, and I asked them about the sign that was at Parkview Field. I said, is that information correct? And they all kind of looked at me and didn't know. And so I said, okay, I'm looking for a research project. Let's see what I can find. And 13 years later, I've got 1,600 newspaper articles that I've printed out.
Wow.
I've got about 12 binders, and I made a presentation 2 years ago at the Fort Wayne History Center about what I found, and we've kind of gone on from there.
Yeah, so like, how was that transition for you? You know, going from just the history of baseball, you know, looking up the, you know, the Ted Williams and the Cy Youngs and the Babe Ruths and those guys long before our time. How was that transition for you going from that, and what do you think played a factor into you going from that and, you know, going more into the black baseball?
Well, just that sign at Parkview Field, I had some point of starting, and I wasn't sure where that information came from, but I had a start point, which was 1920 to 1929, so that's kind of where I started. I backed up. I went all the way back to 1909 when it was mentioned.
Wow.
All the way up to 1960 when the Colored Giants opened a fish hatchery up in Angola, Indiana.
That's crazy. Yeah, I was going to – that I think that is probably the most popular team, I would say, that everyone associates with black baseball here. For the audience and myself, you know, that are trying to learn a little bit more, tell us a little bit about the Colored Giants here from Fort Wayne.
Colored Giants were first mentioned in the newspaper about 1908. It was started by two gentlemen, Louis Dupuy and George Wilson.
Okay.
They both played. They actually both played in a band, which played before the ball game. So they entertained while the game was going on. But those two guys were elevator operators at the Commerce Building, which still stands downtown Fort Wayne. And that's where they met each other. They put the team together, got some guys together, and started touring and started playing around. They played for a percentage of the gate. It was usually negotiated before they got there.
Mm-hmm.
And they got part of whatever ticket money was sold, and that's how they made money.
So I don't want to sound ignorant here, but, like, so who did they play? And because obviously strong segregation in this time. So, like, what kind of teams did they play, and was the team all colored, or were they all black?
Fort Wayne colored Giants were predominantly black. I did find when you're going through research, there's always that aha moment. And one of the moments was from my relative, who was a pitcher for the Lincoln Lifers. One of the things that the colored Giants always lacked was pitching, good pitching. So my relative played for the colored Giants when he wasn't pitching with the Lincoln Lifers.
Wow.
So they did have some integration to that. Mm-hmm. Fort Wayne has a history of integration on some of their teams. The Lincoln Lifers actually used two black players, in the late mid-20s. So it was something that was around a little bit, but it was predominantly a black team overall. Where they would go, they'd go to any neighboring town that wanted them. They'd go to Auburn, Garrett, Angola, Fremont, Hicksville, Ohio, Huntington. They went as far as they made a trip in 1928 down to Alabama, came up through some other states, came through Kentucky, picked up some players along the way, which I thought was kind of interesting. So a lot of them were given jobs up here if they could find jobs and or help them find jobs to make it worthwhile to come up here. So it was kind of a that's the way I always look back at this. It's always kind of community driven. They were very community driven team. They would play at a opening, like I said, of a fish hatchery. They'd go play on Memorial Day weekend. They'd go play 4th of July, Labor Day. All those 4th of July holidays, all those holidays would always have the colored Giants coming in. They'd draw a big crowd, 1,000, 2,000 people. If they played at League Park downtown here in Fort Wayne, they would draw upwards of 3,000 or 4,000. And it was usually an integrated crowd. It was usually, you know, multi-colors, whether it was males, females. It was always a really good crowd that came and watched them.
That's awesome. Yeah, and like, so comparing it to like the leagues that we have today, what league would you compare it to? Like the kind of league that they played in, or like the kind of teams that they played in? Would you compare it to like the Fort Wayne Adult League, or what league would you compare it to?
It would probably be a step above the adult league.
Okay.
I mean, these guys tried out. They had to keep playing well.
Yeah.
It was all based on can I get to the games? Can I be a good enough player to take a bus trip down to Huntington, Indiana to play a game? So, you know, they had to play well. The games that I've probably found a couple hundred games. Their record was probably under 500, but they played a lot of good teams. They even played Negro League teams.
Yeah, I was going to say,
they played Rube Foster's Chicago American Giants.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's legit. And so sticking with the colored Giants, tell us about some of the top players from that team that, you know, you could probably educate some of the people about?
Yeah, there's a couple of players in particular. One of the guys came from Van Wert, Ohio. His name is B. Selden.
Okay.
He had played for the Chicago American Giants. Rube Foster was a big fan of his, and always came to Fort Wayne to recruit Selden to come back to play. Selden found a job at the local school in Van Wert, and he didn't want to uproot his wife and have to move to Chicago, so he just stayed in Van Wert, but he also came over to Fort Wayne and played for the colored Giants pretty frequently. Locally, Robert Wigfall, I've met his grandson. I asked for a picture, and he said we had a house fire, and he said, unfortunately, we don't have any pictures.
Jeez.
So that's been my biggest struggle, is try to find pictures of these guys. I've tracked down grave sites and those types of things and obituaries and try to look for surviving relatives. But Wigfall was probably another one. And then probably George Wilson and his son, George Jr. His grandson comes to Fort Wayne about every 4th of July.
Wow.
I actually had them throw out the first pitch, and John Nolan and Mike Nutter were gracious enough to allow them to go out and throw out the first pitch for a game. So that was exciting to see, and they were just in awe that how many people turned out, and people were applauding them about their relative being former member of the Colored Giants. But George ran the team for probably 10 years altogether. He was also in a band. So they played before, after, and between innings sometimes. So he ball uniform and everything. So he was back singing and playing keyboards or drums, yeah.
Crazy. Busy. Yeah, and good friends of the show, as you mentioned too, John Nolan and Mike Nutter. Right. Great friends of mine, great people. Yep. That doesn't shock me at all that they did that. So sticking, you know, I also wanted to ask you, you know, so you mentioned the Colored Giants started in the early 1900s. So I think it was the 20s. The Pirates came about. Tell us a little bit about the Pirates.
Yeah, 1926. Rip Foster came to Fort Wayne pretty frequently. He was one of the founders of the Negro Leagues. Mm-hmm. And it was a team that he put together. He sent all the players over here. And they used one player from Fort Wayne, or actually two, Robert Wigfall, who I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. Wigfall was a great hitter, played third base, shortstop, and second. And I met his grandson a couple years ago, but he was Foster was really set by getting that team here in Fort Wayne, the Fort Wayne Colored Pirates, and he stocked that full in 1926. They started the season. They actually played the Cleveland Negro League team and beat them when they came to Fort Wayne.
Wow!
So that was a pretty big game. If you know who Tweed Webb is, Tweed Webb was a Negro League historian.
Yeah.
He's one that helped get Rube Foster into the Hall of Fame. But Tweed Webb spent 1926 in Fort Wayne playing for the Colored Pirates.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, this is why we got you in here.
Team played the whole year of 26. They came back in 27. It appears as though they may have ran out of money. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing was 1928, when the team reappeared, their leading pitcher, their number one starter, was a guy you may know, Smokey Joe Williams.
Yep.
Who is a pitcher. If you talk to Negro League experts, if there's anybody that would approach Satchel Paige's as good as Satchel Paige, Smokey Joe Williams would be one of them. He was elected to the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame in 1999. Mm. He played here when he was in his mid-40s and upper 40s, so he had some age on him, but they said he still threw as hard as he ever did.
Yeah, I mean, how long did Satchel Paige play? I don't think anyone actually knows because the age is always all over the place. But you know, that wasn't different back then, right? People played when they were 40s and 50s all the time, right? Yeah. That was very common.
Yep, very common, very common.
So while we're on the Negro League team, can you talk about, you know, some of the teams that have played here from the Negro Leagues, or even, you know, players that, you know, have graced the fields here in Fort Wayne that people may know?
The easy answer is there's probably not a Negro League player that you could think of and or a Negro League team that did not come here.
Wow.
I think I'd be hard-pressed to find a team or a player that hadn't been here, either in a game playing the local semi-pro team, the Lincoln Lifers, whether they were playing any of the local teams, if they were playing the Colored Pirates or the Colored Giants. You knew that they were going to give them a game. Mm-hmm. Fort Wayne also hosted 16 actual official Negro League games.
Mm-hmm.
That was two Negro League teams. They played here against each other.
Mm-hmm.
Fans turned out, usually 2,000-3,000 people. It was great. Some of those statistics are in the statistics that MLB is using for those Negro League players to qualify for the Hall of Fame. A lot of them, there weren't box scores. They were just line scores. So we really didn't have any information to give.
Right.
But what we've given so far has been any box score that I found, I forwarded on to the historians that are working on that project.
So if I say names like Josh Gibson.
Yep.
Been here?
Yep.
Jackie Robinson.
Jackie Robinson was here. Yes. And he came here personally two or three times, but he was here with the Kansas City Monarchs.
Mm-hmm.
There's they're trying to get Ray Dandridge into the hall. He's been here. A lot of those players, for instance, when Ernie Banks was playing, he played for in the Negro Leagues. He played for the Monarchs. He was here. Mm-hmm. The only one that I missed was country singer Charlie Pride.
Oh, wow.
He played for the Memphis Red Sox. He
left, I forgot about that.
He left the team about 2 weeks before they came to Fort Wayne, so I didn't see his name in the box score. But, yeah, I mean, Henry Aaron played his second game with the Indianapolis Clowns here in Fort Wayne. He hit cleanup. He was, I think, 19, hit cleanup and was 2 for 4.
Jeez.
And the Fort Wayne team beat him. It was the, I believe it was the Allen Derry team at that point. But, yeah.
And you mentioned something else that has me excited, too. You mentioned the Indianapolis Clowns, mm-hmm. who are back now. They're going to be in the Banana Ball League. But
yeah, I saw that. That's going to be cool.
I was going to ask your first reaction to that announcement.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool. I know one of the independent leagues, the Kansas City Monarchs, are a team in that league. So I was just excited to see that and try to keep that history alive.
Yeah, we got to try to get the Colored Giants or the Pirates back.
That'd be awesome.
Why not? I mean, we got it. It's not like we don't have a field that they could play at. Just saying, if you're listening, Tin Caps people, Michael Limmer, just saying, Mike Nutter. But, you know, as you started going through all these, which I know there's, you know, a write-up and everything that I think you were even on MILB.com with your research, you know, what is the most fulfilling part of this for you? You know, because like obviously it's, you know, you seem a lot like me where you like just thrive off of learning,
right.
Which is the big thing for me too. But for this, for going through all this history and learning all these things and meeting all these people and, you know, making connections for you, what is some of the most satisfying parts about this?
Just the story. It's an amazing story when you think about Fort Wayne baseball. I mean, there was a lot of players that came through here, mm-hmm. Major league players even now today. But that history of black baseball here, that doesn't take a back seat to any of the history that we already knew.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important. I mean, even if you take, you know, if you look later on, you look at those teams that won the semi-pro World Series.
Yeah.
If they wouldn't have had Negro League players on that team, there's no way they would have won. No way.
That's true.
I mean, you had Jim LaMarcois threw a 12-inning complete game. It was the only loss that they had. And any interview that he did after that, he always laughed. He said, I went 12 innings, and I lost the only game we lost the whole tournament.
Mm.
But that's the kind of quality baseball that those guys were doing while they were here, while they were in town, while they were playing here locally, and those types of things. I mean, Smokey Joe Williams was the same way. He struck out 10 or 11 of the Cleveland Negro League players, and he was probably 15 years older than they were. So it's just that story. I wanted to find out what the truth was, what the supporting documents are important to understand, but just so people know about it. Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest part of this, just so you know.
So through all of this, how far did you make it? You talked about you started, like you said, you started in 26 or 1906 when you, the research you started doing.
Yeah, it was about 13 years ago. Yeah, so it's 2013, something like that.
So going through this historic years, did you travel through every year? How far did you make it and going through?
I went through every year.
The way up to?
Yep.
To now?
Up till 1960. Yep.
Wow.
Because at that point, that was the last mention.
Yeah.
There wasn't any mentions. And as you would suspect, mm-hmm. when Jackie Robinson signed with the Brooklyn Dodgers, black town teams, Negro leagues, I mean, the Negro leagues fought mm-hmm. that sale of Jackie Robinson to Brooklyn because mm-hmm. they knew that he was one of the reasons why they had a team. If he leaves, we're in big trouble.
Yeah.
So, you know, that part of that is just interesting to see, you know, how all that came about. But just making sure that, you know, that story's being told and people understand that. So, I mean, it's a big part of that, and they were a big part of the community.
Yeah, and that story, obviously, you know, being a black man that played baseball, grew up in baseball, Jackie Robinson's always the, you know, the story that's always told. You know, he's the guy. And so did you, were you able to find like any behind the scenes things on his journey that maybe a lot of people may not know? I mean, there's the movie out that, you know, people right. could watch, but there's always something that doesn't quite make the movie that, you know, any cool stories or anything, you know, that people may be interested in?
Not relatable to Fort Wayne, but the only thing that I saw was there was an article by the folks from the Brooklyn Dodgers had been interviewed. Branch Rickey said there were better players than Jackie Robinson, mm-hmm. but his temperament was perfect for what he would have to go through, mm-hmm. and it seemed to. So that was important. You know, I remember one of the articles I found that Jesse Owens was, he owned the Toledo team, and he came to Fort Wayne a couple times and ran against high school kids here. And I talked to one of the high school kids' grandsons or sons, and he said that Jesse Owens was such an amazing runner that by the time that gun went off to take off, he was six steps ahead of those kids. And he turned around and he said, "Come on, come on, come on," cheering them on. And he was almost running backwards. He was running so fast. So, you know, it's those kind of stories that you see that, and, you know, there's a lot of aha moments. When mm-hmm. I found out that Smokey Joe Williams was here, mm-hmm. when I found out that Chuck Harmon, the first black player for the Cincinnati Reds, played for one of the semi-pro teams here in Fort Wayne.
Huh.
Also, John Kennedy, who was a shortstop, he was the second black player for the Philadelphia Phillies. You know, those kinds of things are we didn't know. Nobody knew about them. So, you know, hopefully this all leads to being able to change that sign at Parkview Field so we can get it up to date and hopefully get the right information on there.
True. And obviously through all this time, you know, there's so many players that, you know, have played here that have Fort Wayne ties, whether they were born here or just spend a little time here. And, you know, all those people that came way before us have paved the way, you know. Yeah. I wouldn't have been able to play, you know. And now, you know, going to here in 2026, you go to some travel baseball games and there's, you know, black kids everywhere playing. You know, yeah. There was a time where they couldn't even afford to play.
Right.
So, you know, that's why this is special for me to cover, because like there's so much history and so many sacrifices have been made, you know, in order for us all to play together. And, you know, and people like you that I really respect, because you go out of your way and make it your responsibility almost to go through all the history. And without you, we wouldn't know a whole lot about black baseball in Fort Wayne.
Well, it's an important thing that and it helps people kind of rally, you mm-hmm. know. Hopefully we can get some conversations going about that, because I think it's important. It's like every other history, you have to understand history of what happened and how it happened and why it happened. So you know, any light I could bring to it, I'm happy to do. I enjoyed every bit of it.
Have you written any books?
Not yet.
Am I giving you ideas?
I've talked to a number of people and say, why haven't you written a book about it?
Absolutely.
And I retire in a couple months, so that's
there you go.
So, yep.
So then you'll have time
yeah,
to write it if you
time.
Want. There we go.
I don't have any excuses.
That's right, yeah. So, Tim, I can't thank you enough for coming in and doing this. I know there's so much to unpack. And, you know, I know my good buddy Logan Weening of Orford Baseball Company is doing what he can as well with the merchandise and telling stories with his platform as well. Couldn't thank him enough. But I can't thank you enough for doing all this.
Well,
you know,
I appreciate what you're doing, DC.
You know, I research and your name comes up so much with all this information, like even just looking it up. And without you, we wouldn't have that. So I really, really, from the bottom of my heart, appreciate you for all the work that you're
doing. I appreciate Logan and you guys do a great job, and just keep what you're doing.
Thank you so much. Hey, keep in touch. I want to be the first one. When you announce that book, I want to be the first one.
That's a deal.
Sounds good.
Thanks,
Tim, for coming in.
You bet.
Yeah, it's that 260 dugout. Pull up, let the stories come out. From the cages to the lights, that's what we about. Fort Wayne on the cat, we ain't ever gonna bow out. 260 dugout.